Welcome to another week of Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford, joined by Scott Chu. We're here to talk bats on Pitcher List. Scott, how is your week of summer weather?
Yeah, I mean, I was in Pittsburgh all week. It was hot there. It was hot at home, so I didn't miss out. Humid, hot, muggy weather, but surviving, not melting, not getting sunburned. Can't complain. Just excited to have baseball going on and, you know, seeing a lot of offense.
Yeah, that mugginess and that humidity really brings out the, you know, sends the ball flying just a few yards further, and it really benefits the bat. So, you know, we love these dog days of summer as hitting guys.
That's what we're after. We're after big hits, especially, you know, it's even more in the South where they, like Texas, where they get that dry heat. 'Cause then, you know, the ball dries out and it weighs less. It's all that stuff. But either way, summer is when bats tend to heat up. So that's kind of a theme going on in certain places right now.
Yeah. With all the mugginess up here, I need to install like a humidor in my house or something. This is crazy, but we'll jump into some news and notes for this week. Back from the IL, a couple guys back from the IL. We've got Cincinnati outfielder Austin Hayes, New York Mets third baseman Mark Vientos, and Detroit utility man Matt Vierling, all back from injuries of different lengths. Anybody from that list of three names that appeals to you in, you know, those 12 team leagues that we're always talking about?
Yeah, I think the most interesting one is going to be Mark Vientos. So I wasn't sure how much he was going to play because of how, I mean, basically he was terrible to start the season. The plate discipline was good. The results were awful. We weren't seeing the power. We weren't seeing any of that. It looks like the Mets are just going to give him an everyday shot between third base and DH. He's actually only played third base once in the three games he's been back. He actually hit second. That was against a lefty because I think they moved down Nemo and Soto. But you know, the thing with the Mets is that they badly need power and they badly need some offensive production. And their best chance of getting it is seeing Mark Vientos be what he was last season. Right. So I think they're going to give them every shot to do that. And it might impact the playing time for Brett Batty a little bit, but they had him play second the day that they put Vientos at third. It might affect Ronnie Mauricio a little bit. The worst case scenario is the three of them rotate so much that none of them, you know, kind of get enough playing time. But best case scenario for fantasy is probably seeing Vientos go off. He's probably got the most upside of these three. So good seeing him. As far as Austin Hayes, I mean, look, he hits fourth. That's right behind Ellie De La Cruz, and running hot TJ Friedl and Matt McClain. It's a good place to be. I don't love the skill set. He's an aggressive hitter, doesn't walk. That'll play in Great American Ballpark, but he's going to be very streaky because, I mean, that's just the way it goes. When you're really aggressive, you don't take walks. You put a lot of balls in play. He goes through these periods, not of strikeouts, but of really poor batted ball quality. Lots of ground outs, lots of just ugly balls in play. So watch out for that, but he's a very nice streamer when he's hot. Just don't hold on to him too long and you know, lose all the profit you gained when he was hot by forcing yourself to start him when he's cold. He's just not a player that's good enough to lock in all season long. And then, you know, finally on Matt Vierling, I'm not sure, but I'm certain he's not going to play enough right now to be interesting in 12 team leagues. I was kind of looking to see like who is mostly affected by this. They sent down Trey Sweeney. And I mean, honestly, I think Vierling's just going to kind of play around. He played center field once, gave Parker Meadows a day off, weirdly against a righty. But I mean, I think maybe it impacts Colt Keith a little bit, Parker Meadows, a bunch of guys right now that are on the fringes in 12 team leagues. So it kind of doesn't do anything to anybody except, you know, maybe Parker Meadows, if he stays cold, gets less time, but that's about it.
Yeah, and back to Austin Hayes, he's kind of one of those guys that you can give the course treatment to, right? Because he's in Cincinnati. You know, when he's got six games at home in a week, you can roster him. And, you know, when he's on the road, cut him. You know, it's just looking at situation, looking at matchups, and mixing and matching there. I think that's a great call with Austin Hayes. Let's take a look at some guys who've gone to the injured list this week. A couple of real impact outfielders, Texas Rangers outfielder Wyatt Langford and Arizona Diamondbacks outfielder Corbin Carroll both head to the IL. How does that impact fantasy managers and maybe what are some ways that they can recover from losing those big bats in the outfield?
I think the harder one to talk about is Wyatt Langford because he'd been struggling quite badly, right? I was already getting a lot of what do I do with Wyatt Langford kind of things. And if we just think back 1 year ago, Wyatt Langford had actually a terrible summer, right? Like he really struggled through those dog days. He got cut in a lot of leagues and then came back and then just exploded. And so I was even asked if like, oh, is this a player who's just, been unable to deal with injury? Like what's going on? Quite frankly, he's a young player who needs to go through a lot of adjustment periods, right? I mean, we're talking about a guy who did not spend much time in the minor leagues at all. He's someone who, he came up fast. He's got a boatload of talent and is, basically, he's not a rookie, but it's only his third season in pro ball, right? Drafted and started playing in 2023, only played, for a little while, and then was up in the majors. So, still, learning on the job a little bit. I think he'll have better final. He's definitely going to have better final numbers than last year. And if you just look at the overall numbers, they're actually not as bad as you think. The ratios aren't good, right? A .232 batting average, but 13 home runs and 11 stolen bases in 67 games. That gets him to like 25, 22 ish territory, right? So like he's doing fine. That's not even his ceiling. His ceiling could be much better than that. So hopefully he can just get healthy, come back and be sort of the, really a five cat, at least 4.5 category contributor. The batting average, I think, is just going to be a little up and down, but he's a difficult one. But you got to hold, right? Like even if you've only got the two outfield spots, you cannot cut this guy. You cannot let someone get him for free. That would just be, it'd be malpractice to say that you should do that. So please don't. Even if you're tempted, please don't. With Corbin Carroll, it's only easier because of course you're going to hold him, right? It's unfortunate, but you're just going to hold him until he comes back. And when he comes back, he's going to be a top 10 hitter like that. He'll go right back on the list as a top 10 guy. And it just stinks. Right. So, I think it's very clear that that power outage we saw last year for a good chunk of the year was a mirage. I don't know what it was, an adjustment period. Maybe it was that injury people talked about. We don't know, but it's gone. Right. He's the guy now. I'm not worried about the slight increase in strikeouts because it's just not that much. This guy, he was on pace to be like a 40-20 guy, I think. So, he's just a stud. He's a top 10 hitter in fantasy easy. And you can make arguments. I think I've ranked him close to the top five at some point this season. The only reason I haven't is because there's a lot of guys there's probably like 10 guys who you can argue are top five hitters in baseball, right? It's just how you order them. And it's hard because I was actually just talking about this with my kid today, cause he wanted to talk about top five NBA all time. I'm like, look, that group, there's not five guys who are in consideration for top five. There are more than five guys that you could call a top five player because there's like six guys you can argue are on the outsides of that. You're like, oh, LeBron, Jordan. And then you kind of get a little bit of a wash, right? So it's same for that. And Corbin Carroll's right up there. And Kyle Tucker, Jose Ramirez, he's in that conversation.
Well, let's talk about a couple of guys, a couple of minor league transactions. Tampa Bay Rays bring back outfielder Chandler Simpson and option Cameron Meisner back to the minors. And then in a corresponding move with the Corbin Carroll going on the IL, the Diamondbacks, they bring up outfielder Jake McCarthy. Are Simpson or McCarthy, either one of them guys that you might be targeting in 12 team leagues?
Well, look, Chandler Simpson is the rabbit of all rabbits. Right. He might hit. He'll hit for some average. He won't hurt you in average. He might even help you. He's hitting .289 right now. He might be able to keep doing that, but he will hurt you in RBI. As long as he's at the bottom of that lineup, he will hurt you in runs. He will either hit zero or one home runs this year. Right. And that's just, they could play him every single day. They are playing him every single day. Cause I guess he, air quotes, worked on his defense or whatever it is they wanted him to do down there. If you need stolen bases, Chandler Simpson is a target. If you do not, I recommend you kind of just stay out of it. Right. And that's because I know there's a whole thought. What if I get him and then try to trade him? Well, maybe if you have a wide open spot on your bench, fine, but trading is harder than that. Look, some leagues that might work because you find trading is very easy, especially for stolen bases. And you could have the guy that's like, you got a stolen base problem. I got your solution. Assuming that person didn't outbid you in the first place, but yeah, I find it generally ill-advised to add a player just to trade him. So mostly it's because you want speed. You need speed. Then go ahead and bid hard because he's probably the premier stolen base threat in the league when he gets running. right? That's just stole 100 bases in the minors, for God's sake. So yeah, he's obviously interesting, but very situational. He's incredibly hard for me to rank, actually, because there are teams who don't need speed. Either they've chosen to punt it or they already have a bunch of it. You know, they have Ellie, they have someone else. Chandler Simpson will not add any value to their team, right? You don't get extra points for winning first in steals by 100, right? You get nothing. You get nothing at all. In fact, all you get is lost stats for those plate appearances by other guys who might hit for power, might, you know, get more runs, get more RBI. So again, very situational sort of guy. Jake McCarthy, I'm done with that roller coaster, right? It's like high highs, incredibly low lows. I don't need that in my life anymore. I'm 37 now. My heart's not the greatest, right? I've eaten a lot of sodium in the last 3.5+ decades. Like I can't handle that kind of ride. So I'm just not going to go on it. And I'm sure he's going to have these moments where people are like, I can't believe you weren't in on Jake McCarthy. And I'm like, well, yeah, I just wasn't in on any of them. I tried, but it just doesn't last long enough. Like, don't let the final numbers fool you. That production all comes in these really short segments, right? And then it's a ton of burnout after that. You like lose a ton of value that he provided to your team just by holding him for the next 2 months, hoping you get some of it back.
A quick strategy question for you, just because I'm curious what your thoughts are here. If you're punting stolen bases, can someone like Chandler Simpson, are you scooping him to try to single-handedly get you a category win in those 12-team head-to-heads? Or are you just, like you said, leaving it alone and just being like, you know what, I'll try to win 9-1 every week?
So let's say Chandler Simpson plays the rest of the season. He stole 21 bases in 40 games. It's probably about right. He might get another 30 if he plays every day, right? 30, 40 stolen bases. That won't win you your league if you've been punting, right? It might get you from like, what you have to realize is so let's say you're in Roto, it might get you like, is it going to just take you from 12th to 10th? Right? 2 Roto points. You're going to burn a whole spot on your roster for up to 2 Roto points, right? Like it's not going to work that way. I think if you've been punting in head to head, I'd say keep punting, right? Because he hurts you in more places than he helps you. And week to week, stolen bases are super fluky, right? He averages a stolen base every other game, but that's not actually what happens, right? There are weeks where he will not steal enough to quote unquote, win you the category, right? There's plenty of weeks where he had like 1-3. That doesn't do it. Doesn't win you the category. So I think if you've been punting, you keep punting and you continue to focus your resources on the 4, 5, 6, however many categories your league is in. Now, where Chandler Simpson makes where you get the most juice from Chandler Simpson is when you're in the middle of the stolen base rankings, right? Because those tend to get really tightly grouped. So adding 30 stolen bases can move you up 5, 6, maybe 7 points, right? Depending on where you are. If you're at the very bottom, you're far out of it, don't bother. If you're at the very top, like again, you're potentially losing runs, home runs, RBI that you could have gotten from another player and help across your categories instead of just padding this one. There's a lot of teams that are in the middle of that pack. So there's a lot of teams that should be interested in Chandler Simpson, but there are folks who very plausibly shouldn't be, because you're already winning it by a lot, or there's just not a lot of points to gain, right? Either because you're already at the top or you're so far at the bottom that, like, again, there's just nothing to gain.
Great answer. And that's kind of what I gathered. I hate punting categories. I think it's a terrible strategy. It's so difficult to win, especially in roto leagues. It's so difficult to win when you're getting 1 point out of the 10 possible, or, you know, the 12 possible points out of 120, you're guaranteeing yourself only one. It kills me to punt a category in Roto. So I was curious your head-to-head categories take, because I don't play head-to-head categories league very often.
Tell that to my TGFBI team, Brett. We punted seals and staves, don't care. Best finish I ever had in TGFBI was 9th overall, and it punted steals and it got saves in season. It can be done. It's incredibly difficult. In head-to-head categories, I find it an extremely viable strategy. There's 2 good categories to punt. Well, 3, right? Don't punt all of them at the same time. Saves, steals, and batting average. Batting average is the big one in categories because batting average is fluky anyway, right? You say like, oh, I've got Kyle Schwarber, I'm going to have a bad batting average. Actually, you're going to have two things. You're going to have amazing batting averages and then really bad ones, right? And you're resetting every single week. There are weeks where Kyle Schwarber will carry your batting average because that's the kind of guy he is, right? He gets super hot. Yeah. And then he's cold and he's hitting nothing. But in batting average specifically, and to a slightly lesser extent, OBP, it's extremely volatile week to week, right? It takes a whole season for these numbers to stabilize. So go ahead and punt it, right? You're not going to feel it the way you think you are. Now in Roto, punting is much harder. That's the hardest place to punt. In head-to-head cats, you don't need all of them. You don't even need, like, so in Roto, you need help. You really want help in all five categories offensively, right? To get as many offensive Roto points as you can, and they accumulate over the season. And head-to-head, if you go 7-3 every week, you're crushing it. Now, again, you're never going to guarantee yourself that. But punting one or two categories, you'll accidentally win some of them, right? Like, if you have barely any steals, like, it's not like you're going to draft a team that has absolutely no steals. Punting just means I'm not focusing on steals. I don't care what happens with steals. You will win some weeks in steals. You will. Because the other team didn't get any either. Because they faced, like, the Tigers or something who cuts everybody down. Like, it doesn't matter. So, you're just... Punting is incredibly viable in head-to-head. I think you should be looking at yourself right now. Look at your team right now. Look at your standings. Look at how you finish in those categories each week. If you are losing steals every single time and you keep using all of your waiver resources on trying to get more of them, stop. Just focus on the other four. And every time you add a category, punting becomes more and more viable. It's better in 6x6 than 5x5. It's better in 7x7 by 6x6. And every time you increase categories, you care less about specifically stolen bases. Stolen bases have an incredibly outsized value in Roto, particularly 5x5 Roto, because there's not very many of them. And you got to split them across all these different teams. And it's worth the same number of points as the others, right? But what happens is, so it's worth like 20% of your offense, right? 10% of all of your points come from stolen bases. When you're at 7x7, you've now changed the number. Like, you've changed the odds. And now you're looking at what, like 7.5% of your points. That's a pretty significant, like, it doesn't sound like much, but that's a significant difference. You can, ignoring 7.5% of your potential points. Absolutely. Right. Especially it happens in draft. Like, you never go in saying I'm going to punt, but like you have your first three rounds and you've got like two pitchers and Kyle Schwarber. Don't worry about steals anymore, man. Like if you bump into some, that's fine. But if you don't, who cares? Right? Like, you can decide on steals pretty early. The rest, you should wait, see how it goes. But that's my thing. I actually, especially in head-to-head cats, punt. Like, again, you don't go in deciding to punt, but it can become a reality very quickly, either in the draft or in season, right? All of a sudden, you're like, oh, I'm not getting steals anymore, right? Like, that's not really working out. There's a very viable path, say, instead of spending all your resources on, you know, Chandler Simpson's like a pretty extreme example if you're in the middle of the pack. But if you're like the bottom of the pack, stop trying. That's okay. Focus on the others. Win those.
Well, listen, if there's two podcast guys in this entire industry that love punting, it's Pat McAfee and Scott Chu. We'll take a break. When we come back, Scott's top 150 hitters list for this week. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford. I'm with Scott Chu. We're going to talk about Scott's top 150 hitters list, the hitters on pitcher list. Scott, obviously, you know, people can find you at pitcher list, writing this column every week. Where else can we find your work?
Yeah. So obviously I'm writing this article. The other big thing I do, I'd say, is that Reddit AMA. So if you're on Reddit or whether you're not, there's a fantasy baseball subreddit over there. There's a lot of great conversation going on a daily basis, but especially on Friday. I've got a partner in crime now, Nate Schwartz, and we are answering tons of questions, right? I mean, I'd say we probably get about 100 questions over the weekend, and we're there answering them. And there's really two things, right? You can get your question answered if you have one, right? And it's not like it's a free it's like a free trial. We're like, we'll answer up to two follow-ups and then we'll ask you to join the Discord. That doesn't happen. It's, hey, someone will say, I want to add this guy. And I'm like, yeah, show me the rest of your wire, right? Like we take the time, we do that. So come on down. Even if you don't have a question, seeing the answers to the other questions can be very useful, very interesting. It also tells me a lot about how people feel about players, right? Like it's a reason I talk about Riley Green every single week, because there's people that have negative things to say about Riley Green. And I understand that, but I don't want to understand that. I like, in theory, conceptually, I get it, but I love him. And so I defend him even harder because I know, but yeah, it's a great place. Check it out. And then of course, there's this podcast and random guest spots. I think I was on Sirius XM a couple weeks ago.
Well, we'll jump into your top 150 hitters list that comes out every midweek, Wednesday, Thursday, on pitcherlist.com. If you aren't checking it out and you're listening to this podcast, that's kind of weird. But you should definitely check out the column. Let's jump right into our risers this week, up to tier two. And granted, this wasn't a big move, but it was a tier jump, right? James Wood goes from tier three to tier two. He goes up two spots from number nine to number seven. Tell me why James Wood is a top seven hitter in baseball and not just because Ron Washington refuses to pitch to him.
Yeah. So I want to start with just exactly what it means, right? So being in tier three, like, that's good. That means I'm talking about you with Pete Alonso. I'm talking about you with Francisco Lindor. I'm talking about you with Kyle Schwarber, even currently Cal Raleigh, because again, it's future looking and I'm not sure Cal Raleigh can keep doing this, even though I love what he's doing. And it's not as though the power is at all illegitimate. It's just the current pace, that home run fly ball rate, that's really high. That's Aaron Judge high. Again, it means it's plausible, but that means he's Aaron Judge now. So what it means is what I've done by putting him in tier two. Tier two contains Jose Ramirez, Ellie De La Cruz, Kyle Tucker, Juan Soto, James Wood, and Bobby Witt Jr. That means that's the company I think he's in right now. And not just like because of like past performance or like that's where our player rater puts him, anything like that. No, it's because that's how good I think he is. James Wood was someone I was very high on in the preseason as well. And a big part of that is because he's got that huge power, even though he hits the ball the other way a little too much. He's got huge power and he's got good decision-making, right? And he actually started the season not great on the decision-making side, but he's been above average or even a like well above average pretty consistently since like May, like the start of May. The contact kind of comes up and down, right? His contact ability, but his power is off the charts. Like, he is like top of the league power-wise, just the way he's able to put the ball in play, get extra bases. Especially compared, you know, like our power metric looks a lot at based on the pitch you got and you hit it, how much better than average did you do on that pitch? Right. So if you get a meatball center, right, and hit a home run, you only get so much credit for that because we expected you to just blast that ball. That power metric goes up because he takes balls that other guys can't hit hard and he hits them hard, right? He gets extra bases out of those. He's got great ability. The strikeout rate is very managed, right? So that was the big thing when James Wood came out. We were worried about that strikeout rate. It had been high in the minors in the past. We weren't entirely sure what to make of it. He's really done a good job keeping that under 30%. I'd say right now it's at 27.2. The walk rate is up. He's hitting 281, and that's not luck, right? Like, our expected stats, Baseball Savant's expected stats tell you that's all legit. Right? Like, that's a 19% barrel rate, folks. 19%. One out of five balls, basically, that he puts in play is a barrel. That's nuts. That's basically double league average, right? Hits the average exit velocity, of course, 94.1 miles an hour, basically a hard hit ball, right? He does it all. Like, there's nothing, there's no part of his game. And he's on the Nats, so he runs, right? If Jesse Winker can run, anyone can run. James Wood runs. He's got 10 steals. Right now, he's on pace for about 40 home runs, 20 stolen bases. That's what we just said about Corbin Carroll. So how do I not put him in that company, right? And it's not as though he didn't have the pedigree. He had every bit of the pedigree, right? I mean, even look at today, right? So today, he doesn't hit for extra bases. He went 1-for-6, but guess what? He walked four times and stole a base. He had one hit, four walks, and a stolen base. Like, this guy can do it all. He's providing value everywhere. Even if the batting average takes a little bit of a dip, it's going to be good. He hits the ball too hard. He's too patient at the plate to not give you numbers. This is the perfect mold of power hitter. Yeah, the strikeouts are a little high. Who cares? It's still a 2-to-1 walk ratio, right? Like, walk to strikeouts. It's everything. He's someone who I didn't just put him up here for shock value. I expect him to stay this way.
Are you moving to acquire James Wood in any place that you don't have him? I know that you've been high on him since draft season, so there's probably a lot of places that you do have him. But are you moving to acquire him right now?
I don't even know how I would. Like, I just putting myself in the position of someone who has James Wood. Let's say you're in a dynasty league. James Wood is young. Like James Wood is 22 years old. 6'7", 234-pound, 22-year-old. Like, if you're in dynasty and you're rebuilding, that's the piece. Like, that's the guy you build around, right? So I can't get him in dynasty, right? No matter where you are. And in redraft even, it's like, well, I guess if someone's totally out of it, why are they trading with you anyway? And if you're in the middle of the pack, it's only because of James Wood. So like, instead of saying, am I trying to acquire him? What I would tell someone is there is basically no situation in which you try to move him. Like, unless you are getting back a tier two caliber player. Like, yeah,
like I was kind of going down the list and really the only names that might make sense where maybe other people might value this player differently than the way you have them valued would be like Tatis, maybe if he gets hot again.
Yeah. But that's like, that's a tier three guy, right? Like if I'm the James Wood owner, no, I want Tatis plus. And as the Tatis manager, you can't do that, right? Like you can't do it. So, I mean, there are names I would consider. So in tier three is Ronald Acuna Jr. The problem is I got to think he's going to stay healthy all year. I'm pretty sure James Wood will, right? I need to know Acuna. Now, if you told me Acuna would, he would probably be ranked above James Wood, but you can't tell me that. There's not a chance that you can tell me that. Yo, I'm very confident that Ronald Acuna Jr. is not going to get hurt again this season. Like, get out of here. Like, you don't know that. That's a hope. That's a dream. It's a dream we all have, but it's a dream nonetheless. So again, you'd have to be offering me a player that why even bother at that point? Like, why are you going to offer me Kyle Tucker for James Wood in a redraft league? Like, what are we doing?
It's a wash, like, right? Yeah.
Like, yeah. In the professional world, they call that a parallel move, right? It's not a promotion, just a parallel move. Get out of this department, go to that one.
I think the only way that I'm getting you to relinquish James Wood for a player that's not in tier two is if I dangle Riley Green and I say,
and what?
Yeah.
Riley Green and what?
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably the right answer.
You're going to give me Riley Green and Manny Machado.
Yeah. That's tough. There's no way as the Riley Green, Manny Machado owner, there's no way, right?
You've got the depth in your league to do that. Right. And even then the James Wood person might just say no anyway.
Sure. Sure. I mean, he's really excited. He's so fun to watch too. Just being on like the Nats are a fun team to watch in general. And then you have James Wood out there looking like Kevin Durant in the batter's box. He just looks so much bigger than everyone else. And
the most amazing thing about all this. So right now he's the number seventh ranked hitter based on a Fangraphs player rater. The most important, like the thing that's really hard, like mostly power players like this tend to be extremely streaky. Here's the thing. Starting with week two, where he had more than the first week where he has more than 20 plate appearances per the Fangraphs player rater, how many weeks do you think he put up negative value? So between weeks two and currently week 14, we'll count all of those weeks, 2 through 14. How many weeks do you think he had negative value?
One.
He had one bad week.
That's nice.
He also had one where he was worth exactly $0 in 12 team 5x5. So you were very close.
Yeah.
You were wrong.
James Wood is good at baseball and that's not really a surprising take for anybody, but
when he's also making these kinds of decisions, he's just going to be so incredibly consistent. That's what makes you a tier two guy, that you're contributing every single week.
James Wood, number three hitter overall next week or next year.
The only problem with that, I almost want to say yes. The only problem with that is, guys, tier two is stacked. I said, Jose Ramirez, Ellie De La Cruz, Kyle Tucker, Juan Soto, James Wood, Bobby Witt Jr. That's tier two. Like that's the top eight. So when I said earlier in the show, it's hard to talk about like who's top five. There's lots of guys in conversation for top five. Yeah. There's like like in the top five. Like, so that's after Ohtani and Judge. There's like six more guys you can talk about in the top five, and there's only four or three spots for them. So
We've got to move on. We spent a lot of time on James Wood, and for good reason.
It's fun. It's fun. He's so good. I don't always get to talk about good players. You got to talk about, oh, this guy could be good, or this guy's a little piece away from being good. I like just talking about the guy. Oh, he's really good.
Well, we'll move on to another guy that could be really good, but he's pretty good right now. Tier five, he's up 10 spots this week to number 30. That's Tampa Bay Rays third baseman, Junior Caminero.
Oh, yeah, this is an easy one, folks. If he's hitting the ball in the air, he's going to keep moving up. Junior Caminero. Junior Caminero, like everything I'm saying about James Wood, like Junior Caminero is right next to that, right? His only problem is that he has these long periods where he hits too many ground balls. That's it, right? That's it. And I wish I could say, like, don't worry, he's on a team that's going to fix that, because, like, Yandy Diaz never fixed that, right? But Junior Caminero might have, right? And that's how you get a breakout, right? Like, that's how that happens. He's moved up a ton. There was a point this season where he was being dropped. 12-team leagues, he was being dropped. He was that bad to start the year. And you've completely forgotten about that because the ball's back in the air. That's what it is. If the ball starts coming back down on the ground, it's going to be ugly, and we don't know how long it will take for him to get out of that. So that's the thing to keep an eye on, that ground ball rate. But when that ball's in the air, guys, it's smooth sailing. I'm not trying to trade him. There's no sell high here. You're just coasting. You're being happy that this is happening. If the ground ball rate falls down, that might be a buying opportunity, because I do think he'll fix it. The only question is how long.
Let's move down to tier eight, up 11 spots this week to number 58 overall is Chicago Cubs outfielder Ian Happ.
I feel bad because I'm sure he's like a very interesting, engaging person. But for fantasy baseball purposes, Ian Happ is incredibly boring. And boring's okay, but he's incredibly boring. He doesn't do any one thing particularly well. He does a little bit of all of it, and he hits high in the order for the Cubs, who now have a good offense. Basically, Ian Happ's value is very much tied to how good that Chicago offense is doing, because he doesn't do a lot by himself, right? He does just enough by himself to get like everyone hitting behind him. They bring him home. Right? Having Kyle Tucker and Pete Crow Armstrong, like the rest, and Seiya Suzuki, the rest of that offense driving it. Ian Happ just sort of reaps the rewards because he's very much good enough to do that. He's very much good enough to get on base, to contribute, but it's still very offensively tied, right? He's not the kind of guy, if Ian Happ was on a bad team, we would not be talking about him that much, right? Because he doesn't bring that kind of skill set to the table. But when that offense is hot, so is Ian Happ.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with the rest of the risers on Scop's top 150 hitters list right after this. We're back with Hacks and Jacks. It's Brett Ford here with Scott Chu, and we're going through Scott's top 150 hitters list, available on Pitcher List every week. And this week, we've got some risers. We're right in the middle of our risers talk. Let's talk about another guy. He's in tier 10, up 27 spots this week. One of the biggest risers of the week, ranked number 78. And that's the Athletics first baseman, Nick Kurtz. Finally seeing a breakthrough, finally making some hard contact. Scott, what do we love about Nick Kurtz?
Well, so let's think. We already knew about the power, right? And I'm moving him up a lot. There's still a big flaw here in its contact, right? Nick Kurtz is not very good at making contact, right? Based on the pitches he sees, he is much less likely than other guys in the league to make contact with that pitch when he swings at it. However, his decision-making, even coming off injury, has remained very good, and the power continues to grow. You don't have to be good at everything to be very good for fantasy baseball, right? There are other players who fit this mold. As long as the contact isn't so bad. So let's talk about two guys, right? Matt Wallner and Nick Kurtz per Process Plus can be very similar players, right? The only difference is I believe Nick Kurtz will fix his contact problems and Matt Wallner probably will not. Right? That's just the nature of the player that he is. So I'm willing to move up on Kurtz because he's finding ways to produce by continue. I mean, he's made solid decisions almost immediately since coming into the league, which is really important. And the power continues to grow. It's always been positive. That's the key, right? And the contact, it's still bad, but I should mention it is getting better. Slowly but surely, he's creeping up to be more of like, he was like a 70th percentile guy. 75th percentile guy, that's bad. But like, if you're like 85th percentile, that's bad, but that's workable, right? When you start talking like 85th, 90th percentile contact, which I say contact ability, that's one of our proprietary PLV stats that you can get if you are APL Pro. Otherwise, you can sort of substitute zone contact in a way. It kind of works that way. But basically, he can keep working on that. And what I'm seeing is he's now got so much power and the decision-making is so consistent that he can succeed as long as the contact isn't abysmal. And it hasn't been abysmal since he's come back, right? We saw when he first came up, we saw abysmal contact numbers. Now we're just seeing sort of regular subpar contact numbers. And if you just have regular subpar contact numbers, but good decision-making and plenty of power, that's fine, baby. You can live like that, especially as a rookie, right? Because that contact stuff can get better. Or you can just recognize you have a contact weakness and not swing at some junk, right? Like, that's fine. You can do that. I don't think Matt Wallner can do that because his contact is too bad, right? I compare the two, but Matt Wallner's, the problem is the contact is so bad. He's so bad at making contact that it doesn't matter that he's cherry pick. He could cherry pick in the zone all he wants. He's still not going to do what we want him to do. But Nick Kurtz can live like this. He can keep growing. Even if he doesn't make better contact, he can still be a premier power threat. And it's just going to hurt his batting average a bit.
We'll jump down to tier 11. Let's look at the guy who's ranked 95th overall this week. He's up 38 spots, the largest leap as far as improved rankings from week to week. And that's Los Angeles Angels outfielder Joe Adell. Joe Adell is a guy who has been so elusive for me. I feel like every time that I've recommended him in Fab Insights the past 2.5 years, before the column even publishes on Sunday afternoon, he's either been injured or demoted. And that happened literally like 3 straight times that I wrote him up. So I just kind of stopped doing it, but he's been,
I mean, that actually, fantastic. That happened like 2 weeks ago. Like, I actually moved him up the hitter list, and then for the next week, he went like 0-for-30, right? It was horrible. Here's the thing. What we've usually seen from Joe Adell is these big spikes followed by long, long slumps, right? Where he just looks dead in the water. What's really curious to me is that he makes that dip. Like, he struggles a bit, right? But how quickly he bounced back is extremely intriguing to me. The ability to make adjustments more quickly, it's not always going to be a week, but the ability to make adjustments more quickly is really what separates him from guys that are actually good, right? So he has this little strikeout rate spike, but it only lasts for like 10 games and then it's gone, right? So if you just go back to June 18th, right? Like, he was striking out a bunch for the 10 days leading up to June 18th. Since then, strikeout rate 18.6 over 43 plate appearances. Right? The power's all there. It's exactly what you want, right? Like, on the month, it's 24%. And that's because from June 1st through the 17th, it was 28.1% with just one walk. And that's, he even had a 4-game stretch with no strikeouts in there, right? From June 8th. I know I'm spitting a lot of dates here, but basically for a 10-game stretch ahead of that part, he was striking out 35% of the time. He looked terrible. Like, just from June 8th to June 17th, it looked like, it was just a phase, right? Just a yet another phase of Joe Adell. But what if he's changing, right? I cannot sit here and tell you that that is exactly what's happening with any real confidence, because they're human beings, not robots. We can't do that kind of level of prediction, right? What we can do is try to look at peripheral stats. We can try to look at, you know, what else is going on with this guy and see if, you know, like, is there something different? I'll tell you one big thing that was different is how quickly he got back on track, right? That dip, most of it was like a decision-making dip, a little bit of contact ability, only lasted for a second. Usually those are long dips. So the power's way up, the decision-making is staying around average. And as long as the decision-making and contact are staying around average, he's got that plus power. That's the guy we've been waiting for. Can he be a top 50 guy? I don't know, but a top 75, absolutely. Top 100, absolutely. Right? It's a big jump because there's a big difference between sort of that big mushy kind of zone between like even 110 to 150. You can move a lot of points. Like, you can move a lot of ranking spots in there. Like, doesn't really mean a lot, right? It might just be that you're a full-time player now. Like, yay, you move up a lot. Joe Adell has a potential that's better than a lot of the other guys in that range. He moves up a little higher. He gets into the top 100. And that's because, like, if he made this adjustment quickly once, if he keeps doing that, this is a player that we're all very interested in.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to see Mike Trout maybe get a supporting cast and potentially even make a postseason. That would be a lot of fun. I don't even like the Angels that much, but
I say, what team really do you think he's going to do that for? I'm not sure it's this one.
Hey, the Angels are only, you know, a couple games out of a wild card spot right now. What are they? 41-40. They're only one game below 500. And I think that's the first time they can say that in quite a while. I don't know. I'd have to check, but I feel like they've been bad for a long time, despite having Mike Trout and Shohei.
They literally had the two best players in baseball on their team at the same time. And then just put like a AAA team around them and said, let's go.
Get Mike Trout to the playoffs.
Their playoff odds are higher than the Tigers were last year. They are 6.7%.
So what you're saying is they're only like a historic run away from making the playoffs.
They're only, I mean, just copy what they did last year, right? How hard is that?
We'll move on to our final riser of the week. He's in tier 12, up 23 positions. Miami Marlins catcher, Agustin Ramirez. Ramirez is a guy that I was super excited about coming up just because he was catcher eligible. And in my leagues where I needed catchers because mine were struggling, he was an easy pickup and is starting to pay dividends for me finally. Talk to me about Agustin Ramirez and the things he's doing that have risen him up the list.
Well, I mean, just for one, he's a catcher who DHs. That's a big deal. It gives you a lot of playing time. Really, he's had a solid June. He hasn't been amazing for any particular time. In fact, his June, I say it's solid. It's a 92 WRC plus because he doesn't walk ever. But, you know, 5 home runs, .253 batting average. And the thing is, 100, like over 100 plate appearances in June. That matters, right? Not many catchers are going to do that. He DHs like 3-4 times a week, hits in the middle of an order. Sure, it's on a bad team, but the volume is just, the volume is very meaningful. And just like from that, I realized I was probably underrating him. But also if you go back to June 13th, so his last 63 plate appearances, he is hitting .333, slugging .600 with a .157 WRC plus, 4 home runs, 14 RBI. He's a good hitter. He's not one that's going to walk, right? You got to drop him down a bit in OBP leagues and points leagues. You probably don't get in points leagues. It's a bit of a wash because he's a catcher. Like you get the playing time bonus that other catchers don't get, but he also doesn't walk. So it's not great, but he's a catcher who plays every day and hits the ball hard, right? Like it's not complicated to call a catcher good and put a catcher in the top 100 or top 120. If he hits the ball hard, plays every day, right? Like that's it. I mean, that's really all you got to do. The fact that he can be even a little better than that helps Agustin Ramirez, but yeah, he's got the basic pieces to be an everyday locked in catcher for fantasy. And there's only about 8 or 9 of those.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the guys who are falling down Scott's list this week. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. We're here talking about Scott's top 150 hitters list. Let's get into the guys who are falling this week, tumbling down the rankings. We'll start in tier 6. He dropped to number 36 overall, down 10 spots. Atlanta Braves third baseman Austin Riley.
Yeah, it's a long slump. And we saw this last year as well, and I'm getting fairly tired of it. This offense is doing a little better. He's got some home runs, but he was ranked up there because 2021, 2022, 2023, he hit at least 33 home runs, drove in at least 93 runners, and hit no less than .273. That was the kind of guy I thought we got back. He had just started heat up before he got hurt last year. And this year we've seen it in waves, right? But what we haven't seen is just that consistent contributor that I think we had for a long time. And I can't pinpoint an exact thing, right? Everything's just like a little bit down. It's just, you know, the exit velocity is actually, it's been exactly the same for 3 years, which is kind of weird. The barrel rates are all fine. Part of me thinks this should just get better, but it keeps not doing that. So I keep thinking I'm missing something. Either way, I did think it was appropriate to drop him down a tier. Obviously, he's still you know, like still highly regarded. This is still one of the top third basemen in baseball because there's not that many. But I asked myself if someone offered me, you know, he was ranked in a place where if someone, I thought if someone offered me Junior Caminero and I have Austin Riley, would I take it? Yes, quickly, easily. Right. So I'm like, well, I don't know if I can call those guys in the same tier then. Right. And that either means Junior Caminero is in a tier too low or Austin Riley's in a tier too high. So I basically just flipped the tiers they were in. That's a little bit of what goes behind the scenes here. I kind of looked at these two and I was like, I do think Junior Caminero is a tier better than Austin Riley. And kind of going down the line, that's kind of where it landed.
Oh, that's completely understandable, especially the way Caminero has been lifting the ball like you were talking about earlier. It's been fun to watch. Finally blasting some home runs after that horrendous start. So good on you if you were able to hold on to Caminero.
Riley could very easily jump back those 10-plus spots. If we just see give me two weeks of some power. I don't even care if he strikes out a bit. Just give me 2 weeks of some power. Show me that. Really, this whole offense, because Marcelo Ozuna's not doing what we need him to do. Austin Riley's not exactly doing what we need him to do. Acuna's coming back, and he should be supercharging this offense. If those two guys get going, that offense is all of a sudden a force, right? But both Ozuna and Riley just haven't gotten there yet. And to a slightly lesser extent, Matt Olson, they're just not doing what I expect them to do. They were ranked high because I thought there's going to be a ton of counting stats pouring in. The middle of this offense should be fire. They all should have gotten rejuvenated by Acuna. Acuna did his job, and I think the rest of them kind of just aren't getting that surge we hoped for.
Well, now they've got Jerks and Profar returning from suspension, and they're heading to a couple of series with some American League teams that are below 500. The Angels are coming to town. And then they'll host Baltimore for a series. So there's a decent shot at getting some subpar pitching over the next week or so that maybe Riley can heat up.
We'll see. I mean, just to talk about it for a second, the return of Profar doesn't do a lot for me. He will play every day. He's fine to pick up as a streamer if you need him. I don't count on career years coming back, right? Especially a guy who has many, many, many seasons under his belt of being very average or worse. Has one really good year. How hard do you want to buy in right now for many folks in leagues? He's going to be basically free. That's fine. Go ahead and get your streamer. See if it works out. I've got nothing against taking that gamble, but to say like, oh, I need to go acquire Profar. You do not. You don't. You can add him if you need an outfielder who can do a little bit of everything when he's at his best. Yeah. He had awesome numbers last year, but nobody expects that to return.
We'll talk about a couple outfielders here, and I think both of these guys kind of fit that Jerks and Profar archetype, but both of these guys I'd certainly rather have right now than Profar. I might even want both of these guys more than Profar, even if he gets hot. They're both in Tier 10. They're down 22 and 19 spots this week. San Francisco outfielder Jung-Hoo Lee and Pittsburgh outfielder Brian Reynolds.
Yeah, so Jung-Hoo Lee... In points leagues, he's pretty good. He doesn't strike out. He puts the ball in play. He's the biggest reason for this drop is he's lost the leadoff role, right? He's moved down to sixth or seventh in that lineup. His skill set, which is mostly slaps. Like I know he hit some home runs early in the season and that was cool. He didn't keep it. We didn't really expect him to keep it. But with Jung-Hoo Lee, hitting seventh is just not good for him. You want him at the top of the order. Like that's sort of true of every player, right? Except like with a Juan Soto, you're like, can you put some guys on base for those home runs? Right? Like good ones, guys are likely to get on base right ahead of him. With Jung-Hoo Lee, he's supposed to be one of those kinds of guys. So the fact that he's moved out of the top of the order and is now towards the bottom, like closer to the bottom half of it, that is painful to his value. So I had to drop him down. Brian Reynolds has been up and down. Like he used to be a lot more consistent. And really for each of the last two this season and last season, we've seen a bit more of a ride. Like last year he did get to his numbers. And I mean, I dropped him. And of course today he hits a home run and a double. He's had a pretty good week. He may move back up a little bit, but outfield is real deep. And it's, you know, the home runs aren't where they ought to be, right? He's only got nine. Well, he's got 10 on the season now. Thanks to this one here. The path to 25 is actually pretty tough. He's got to hit quite a few more than he already has through about the same number of games. he hits third, but it's for Pittsburgh right now. The thing that could rise him back up a little bit is his average exit velocity over this last like week or so is way higher. It's like mid 90s. So that's awesome, but it's been a lot of up and down, and outfield is just so deep. He doesn't do any one thing particularly well. So I could see how, especially when you start talking about like 10 teamers, he might even be on the wire. He's a guy worth watching, Brian Reynolds, because again, he's shown the ability to put up these good to very good, not great numbers. Really, he's done it for the last four seasons, so I don't know why I'm questioning him so hard. He's gotten there, but eventually this is a hard game to play. It's hard to just keep having these like 2 months where you're not good and then just turn it around. That ship eventually like runs ashore, right? Eventually it's just not good. You can't keep doing that. And so, you know, I just don't want to be left holding the bag, but Brian Reynolds, he's getting hot again. So if you haven't cut him yet, you might as well hold him for a little longer. But a bad July, and it's going to be hard for me to say that you should hold him.
We'll move from the outfield to a couple of first basemen who have been struggling a little bit recently. One of them on a more of a short-term slump and the other kind of a prolonged slump throughout the first half of the season. Athletics first baseman Tyler Soderstrom in tier 11, down 26 spots to 96th overall. And then Houston Astros first baseman Christian Walker, tier 13, 145, barely hanging on in the top 150. He's down 33 spots this week. And talk about those two first basemen for me, Scott.
Yeah. Here's a trivia question for you. I'm making sure he didn't do it today. When do you think the last time Tyler Soderstrom had an extra base hit?
June 1st.
Fifth. June 5th is the last time Tyler Soderstrom had an extra base hit.
That's so a long time ago. That's three and a half weeks ago.
That is a long time to go without an extra base hit for a power hitter, right? So we're talking about 77 plate appearances. On one hand, he has a 351 OBP because his walk and strikeout rates are awesome. Don't get me wrong. He's doing the right things in terms of like approach to the plate. He actually has three stolen bases. He has more stolen bases in this stretch than extra base hits. That's terrifying for Soderstrom. But basically, he's not hitting the ball that hard. Right? 88.6 mile an hour exit velocity. Like that's not the power hitter you kind of hope it is. He's hitting a lot of ground balls, 57.4% ground balls. That, and when he does hit it in the air, so he's hitting it in the air 24.1% of the time. 15% of those are infield flies, right? Just the batted ball quality is way off the mark. He's not pulling the ball. He's just not doing anything. And I got asked about him quite a bit. And people are like, well, should I try to trade him? I got bad news. First base is surprisingly deep this year. I don't think you can get anything for him in a 10 or a 12 team league. I just don't think it's there. Maybe in Dynasty you could, but in Dynasty he's a hold for me because he's got to be better than this. This is sort of the bottom. This is a low, you know, it's a low point for sure. We've seen him rebound from these before, but you know, and it's promising that the strikeout rate is down, but this is really ugly. This is a lot to go with. And for many folks who already have a first baseman, either because they scoop Sod off the wire, like the fact that he's an outfielder is fine, I guess, but in a three outfield league, he's probably not really going to have a spot there. So I'm not saying you should cut him, but I'm saying there are probably many folks out there who have a better option on the wire.
Do you think that Nick Kurtz, have you seen Space Jam first? Have you seen Space Jam?
Yeah.
Do you think Nick Kurtz stole Tyler Soderstrom's talent?
That's an interesting theory. I think Nick Kurtz was already better than Soderstrom to start. So like, it'd be extra mean to do that. It'd be like if the Monstars were already good at basketball, but then they were like, screw it. Let's steal these guys too. Right. Let's just be better than that. Right. Like they rounded up Muggsy Bowes for God's sake. Right. Which by the way, Muggsy Bowes is very interesting. 5'6" wingspan was like 6'3".
Right? Like Dunbar High School, Baltimore, Maryland, alumni.
Yeah. Yeah. He could basically tie his shoes without bending over. Like it was crazy. Love Muggsy Bowes. But yeah. So Soderstrom, it was a great month. What's interesting is that's not even the best month of his career, right? He actually had he did this for a while last year and never really recovered till the very end of the season. So I'm worried. I'm very realistically worried that these spikes just are not going to be often enough or last long enough. So until he like had a little one for like 2 weeks and then just went right back down. So remember how we talked about with Joe Adell? I was so excited because as he came back down, he basically caught himself, starts coming back up. We're just not seeing Soderstrom do that. Once he starts going down, it comes all the way down to below average again, right? I just want that to stop earlier, right? We're seeing this a little bit with Torque as well, only he's not dipping quite so low. But for both of them, it's a problem. And Soderstrom started, he's starting to get benched against lefties. I mean, both these guys are really doing that. I have more belief. Maybe it's just, you know, foolish hope, but I think Torque has a bit more. He's shown a little bit more consistency to hit home runs here and there. Soderstrom's just not even hitting for extra bases. It's nothing. So yeah, I think many of you in 10 or 12 team leagues should be looking at the wire. I'm not saying you just cut him for anything, right? But I'd be looking at the wire to see what's out there, because especially if you need like an outfielder, right? Like, I mean, we're kind of looking at replacement level now. I rank Soderstrom inside my top 100, but every week without an extra base hit, for God's sake, or at least a home run, it's going to start coming down, right? Like the Rockies are going to be in Coors all week, right? If I need an outfielder and Tyler Freeman is out there, and Tyler Soderstrom is the only guy I can drop, I'm not going to stop you, right? Like, I'm not going to say like, oh, just don't do it. I don't think Freeman's better long-term, but in a 10 or 12 team league, three outfield, I think you might be in streaming territory.
That's 100% fair. And then let's talk Christian Walker real quick before we get out of here. Is he still putting the ball on the ground too much? Is that still his problem? Cause I know it was early in the year.
It's often a problem. He hit a home run like a week ago. Let's see. Yeah, he went 0-for-4 today. The thing is with him, when was the last time I saw him look as good as he did in years before, right? He hasn't had any particular period where he's looked that good at all. Like, for some reason, Houston is where first basemen go to die. Like, by the time they pick him up, it's like the Tigers used to have with closers. They'd always get a guy like 1 year past his prime. Doesn't work out. So, like, overall, the fly ball rate for Walker is fine, right? Like, it's not looking terrible. He's had that problem in the past. He's even had that problem this year. But, like, in June, his ground ball rate, only 30.6%. The fly ball rate, 48.4%. In theory, that's where we want to be. The only problem is it doesn't seem like the ball he's not hitting the ball in the air with authority. He's hitting balls hard, but it's more of the line drives and grounders that are being hit hard, and the stuff in the air is more flares. The numbers suggest he should be better than this. But again, first base is deep, right? First base in 10 or 12 team leagues is deep. Why hold on to a guy who is just not showing anything when there's so many guys that have been out there that are, right? Like, streaming first base is incredibly viable. It's not even hard to do. So Christian Walker just makes it inside the rankings, but like, I have other guys at first that I might be interested in, right? Like, Spencer Steer just hit 3 home runs. If you really wanted that versatility, I don't love the underlying skill set for Spencer Steer, but he gets to play in Cincy half the time and he's fine and he's versatile. He can cover multiple positions. If you got a tight bench, yeah, sure. Right. Like, go for it, man. Or like, again, Toklia is going to be at home for a week. He's not a guy I'm keeping after that, but he's going to be at home for a week. Right. That's fine. That's fine. I don't even think your league mates are going to work that hard to scoop him back up. That's kind of where I'm at with Christian Walker, which I wish I had like some deep analysis of what's going on. The fact of the matter is just like first base is too deep to keep trying to hold your way through this.
Well, you mentioned a couple guys on the taxi squad. Let's go through the taxi squad and you know, is there any other guys that you want to mention who are down there that might break into the ranks or at least something you're watching this week?
So most of the taxi squad is like sort of negative news of late. We mentioned Parker Meadows earlier, but he's not in the leadoff gig anymore. I would not hold him. I think he's got interesting talent, but he's watch list right now for me because he's hitting at the bottom of the order and then sitting sometimes. I think both of the big prospects in Boston are guys you don't need to be holding in redraft right now, Roman Anthony or Marcelo Mayer. It's hard being a rookie, and that's okay, right? You grab them just to see if they hit the ground running, which not many do. Don't hold them for, you know, whatever reason, right? Just to see if it happens. Kyle Stowers is on a hot streak right now. But I just think he misses way too often in the zone. I think the contact ability is too poor. And that's just going to be a case where you're constantly chasing the tail of this dog, trying to catch it. And you might for a little while. A guy who might move into the ranks, Lane Thomas. So right now he's kind of just a streamer for me, but I think he's worth scooping. He's getting to play a lot more often. He's hitting near the middle of that order. He broke my heart in the playoffs last year for the Tigers. But Lane Thomas, we've never really seen him put all of his tools together, but if he's going to get playing time every day, and I need to fix it because I still in my head, he always plays for Washington and he's actually in Cleveland. But yeah, so Lane Thomas, definitely a guy who I think if you're looking for an outfielder, you're in a slightly deeper format, give him a scoop. Finally, Brooks Lee. So Brooks Lee also been a bit hot. I think overall the ceiling is very limited. He has more like doubles power than he does home run power. He steals a couple bases. He like does a little, he does everything at like an average to slightly above average rate, but like his slumps can get kind of ugly. He often hits at the bottom of the order. His main attribute is that he's versatile defensively, so he can play at a lot of positions. But for fantasy, like you can go ahead and stream him, but don't get too excited. If you're just looking at him today and be like, oh yeah, he's hot, I should go get him. That heat might already be like, this is about as long as he does this at any given time.
Well, that'll do it for Hacks and Jacks this week. Scott, remind the people where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on X at If The Chew Fits, If The CHU Fits. You can find me on Blue Sky, scottchew.pitcherlist.com. Or you can find me on Reddit every Friday on the AMA or u/Chusef Esquire, C-H-U-S-E-P-H Esquire. I made it up a long time ago and don't feel like changing it. So that's where I'm at on Reddit. You can also find me there.
Beautiful. I'm Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on social media. I write Sunday's Fab Insights for Pitcherlist. I'm also pretty active in the Pitcherlist Discord. Make sure you check us out in those spots. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you all next week with more Hacks and Jacks. See you later.